I'm not going to read a particular section of that, but as I'm going through, it may be of value for you to just to glance and go back and forth. That's where we're going to spend the next period of time. As I'm sure you all know, this coming Thursday is Remembrance Day, a day that intentionally looks to the past, that there are ceremonies, rituals that will happen all over this country, a number of countries around the world. It's a day that looks, I mean, it's right in the title, looks to remember what has happened, to reflect. It's a day that uses symbols as part of the liturgy of the day. The poppy, as I can see a number of you wearing today, a symbol of remembrance. It's a day that, you know, the poem In Flanders Fields is, I don't think it's spoken, it's not recited any other day of the year, at least not typically, but on November 11th, it is something that is standard. It is a common practice. It's just part of the ritual. You know, in Flanders Fields, it was a poem, the reason why it's used in Canada so much, it was written by a Canadian, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. On the occasion that the day before he wrote this poem, he witnessed the death and presided over the funeral of a friend of his in World War I. As I was doing some just reading and research on Remembrance Day, I came across that there's actually another poem that's often used. Maybe it's familiar to you, maybe not. It's called The Ode to Remembrance. It's actually part of a larger poem written by a man named Lawrence Binyon. The larger poem's called For the Fallen. It was written at the very beginning of World War I. He was British, and this was a war that even at the beginning was on a scale and a level that had just not been witnessed to date. And the British Expeditionary Force had just suffered just horrific casualties and loss. And he wrote this poem reflecting on the soldiers that had fallen. And the third and fourth stanza were fairly soon afterwards taken not just as a memorial to British soldiers, but for all soldiers that have fallen. Regardless of the nation, it goes like this. They went with songs to the battle. They were young, straight of limb, true of eyes, steady in a glow. They were staunch to the end against odds uncounted. They fell with their faces to the foe. They shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Often in services where this poem is recited, the audience will respond at the end, lest we forget. Or we will remember them, repeating the last line of the poem. See, Remembrance Day is about remembering the cost of war. It's not just honoring those that have fought for us or fought and died. It's remembering overall the cost of war, because the cost of war is vast, not just in human lives that are lost, but those that are wounded. Not just those that are wounded, but those that they may recover fully physically from their wounds, but just the simple trauma of a battlefield. War is not something that is honorable. There are honorable actions that happen on through individuals in war, but war as itself is not something that is honorable. It is nothing but destructive to the human body and to the human soul. There are honorable men and honorable women who get caught into these and serve and do serve with honor, but war itself is nothing to celebrate. And that's what Remembrance Day is about. It's remembering the cost of war. It has a very good lesson for us to remember, especially after a century from 1900 to 1999. That century witnessed more human bloodshed, more war, more destruction than any century, in fact, than in human history combined leading to the last century. It's a lot of good lessons for us to consider about Remembrance Day, which unfortunately, as we look back on our last 10 years of human history worldwide, we could still learn some lessons. You know, there's that classic cliche phrase, those who fail to learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. This morning I'm going to rephrase that in a different way, and it's this. We must plan to remember, lest we forget. Because every one of us have different kinds of remembrance days. We celebrate anniversaries. For example, if you're married, it's a day where we can remember, whether we reflect or not, but we celebrate a journey of two lives that have become one. We also celebrate anniversaries of deaths, of loved ones. Days that we reflect and look back on a journey that we had shared. And as we get older and older, we just have more remembrance days of different sorts because we have more past to remember. Days remind us of the journey we've gone through life. Or in the case of Remembrance Day itself, a day where we reflect on the lessons we learn from the lives and the journey of others. And it's good for us to remember our important remembrance days, whatever they may be, to pause and reflect. Just think, for an anniversary, for example, a wedding anniversary, how your life would be different if you had not married that person. How much joy your life has received because of the journey you've shared with that person. Or if it's in the case of a death of a loved one, how much joy they brought into your life, the lessons that they brought, they gave you that you could not have received except for the blessing God gave you with that person, even if it was not for as long a time as you might have hoped or wanted. We look at days like Remembrance Day, and we should stop and reflect and go, what types of lessons, what lessons should I learn from this day that I can learn from what has happened so that my future can be different? You know, it sounds cliche, but if we forget our past, we really lose sight of where we're going. And God understands that. After all, He should. He created us. And it's for that reason He created these festivals that we read about in Leviticus chapter 23. Even the Sabbath day, which I'm not going to get into the Sabbath this morning. It's at the beginning of chapter 23. The small groups will deal with Sabbath a little bit. So again, if you want to get into Sabbath kind of discussions, hey, join a small group. But the festivals that God created under the Old Covenant, they were holy occasions, is the phrase one translation uses. Literally in the Hebrew, what is talked about here, these festivals were proclamations of holiness. They were festivals that God set apart for a purpose. There's a reason God did this. In your bulletins, you'll see a little handout that looks at the seven festivals and what the purpose of each of those festivals was, just kind of summarizing the details of chapter 23. Because this morning, I don't want to look at the festivals, each festival specifically. This is not going to be a seven-point sermon. This really is actually a one-point sermon. We're going to look at the festivals in a general view of why did God give these festivals to the nation of Israel and what lesson can we learn from why God did this. The festivals were given by God for the people to remember and celebrate different aspects of their shared history together, the nation of Israel and the God who called Israel into existence. Some festivals like Passover or Unleavened Bread looked specifically to the past, to specific events that God had acted on behalf of the nation, whether it was freeing them from slavery to Egypt through the 10 plagues, culminating in that final plague, the killing of the firstborn, where the angel of death passed over the houses that had followed the instruction given by God through Moses. Or unleavened bread, remembering the journey through the wilderness where God had sustained the people, but it also delivered them from slavery to freedom. Other festivals reminded people of God's continuing provision, such as the festival of first fruits or Pentecost. And yes, Pentecost is actually an old covenant festival. Pentecost is mentioned, we think, more of the New Testament, the New Covenant Pentecost event where the Holy Spirit came upon the church. But Pentecost was an old covenant festival celebrating harvest. The Day of Atonement, we've looked at more specifically in an earlier morning. I'm not going to get into that one as well. But that festival, again, as a reminder, was a reminder to the people of the cost that God bore for continuing relationship with the people of Israel. That all the people did was they'd bring a token. All the sin, all the uncleanliness, all the things that kept them from God, once a year they were to pause and stop, and the ritual there was reminding the people that their God was the one who was going to keep this relationship going. God was the one who forgives and restores and reconciles. These festivals were also to keep the nation united. When the festivals were given at this time, they were a mass of people in the wilderness. The 12 tribes were all together. They had their three tribes in front, three to each side, and three behind, making up the camp. They had their structure, their marching orders, so to speak, but in a few generations, they would be 12 tribes scattered throughout the land that God was giving them. And these festivals were a source of unity. They would celebrate them together. In fact, three of these festivals, they were commanded to come together at Jerusalem, or rather to the tabernacle or the temple, which ended up in Jerusalem. They would come together to celebrate and worship together to promote unity. The reason God was concerned about unity is the purpose of these people, the mission he had called them to, was to, again, be a light to the Gentiles. They were the ones who were supposed to show the rest of the nations how God had called people to live, as well as the character and nature of the one and true God. And if the nation of Israel was constantly bickering back and forth with each other, which unfortunately they all too often did, why would the nations of the world go look at them and say, well, there's something different about them? No, they'd go, they bicker just like we do. They get along just as poorly as we do. They forgive each other just as poorly as we do, or maybe even worse. God cares about unity because what's required to keep unity going is love, forgiveness, mercy, compassion, reconciliation. All these words which we could just describe as a subset of the category of holiness, being separated from what is evil, immoral, and ready and available to do what God has called us to do. That's why unity is so important, why God cares so much about it. Each festival, whether it was one day or one week long, had a purpose of also connecting the life of the nation with the God who had called that nation into existence, called it his own. A purpose the people were to reflect on and consider. And actually, that was the reason God restricted or prohibited work on these festivals. Some festivals, the level of work that was allowed was scaled way back down, especially for the week-long ones. You know, you could provide food, you could make food, you could cook. That wasn't an issue. But for days like the Day of Atonement, there's two festivals where no work at all. The reason was to give people the time and the space to reflect, to stop. Because in an agrarian society with no microwaves, cooking takes a while. It's not just a simple craft dinner quick fix. Try it for a week. It's actually probably good for you. Don't use your microwave. Don't use your microwave for a week. See how long it takes you to cook. See, this is a culture where they don't have the conveniences we have. Everything is literally from scratch. God's prohibition of work or restricting the amount of work on these festival days was to give them the space to reflect on the meaning of that festival.